Speak with power, lead with presence, build your confidence. Meet Central Florida's charisma coach. Welcome to the Mary Gardner Show. Now, here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. It's Mary of the Mary Gardner Show, and I am so happy to be with you today. Today in Central Florida, we're having some rainy weather, and if you're listening today, I hope that you are enjoying your life. You've got things that make you laugh and things that you are proud of that are in your life and that you have people that you love. And today we're going to have a really fun conversation. And today is really special because this individual is a friend of mine. And I wanted to bring a story to you because I know that there are moments in all of our lives when we feel like that whisper that says that this is too much. Life is too hard. This is not for me. And if we're honest, most people listen to that voice and they shrink and they settle and they slowly lower the bar of what they believe is possible. But every once in a while, someone comes along who absolutely refuses, and someone who looks at the impossible and decides that's just a starting line. And today's guest is one of those people. Imagine being told that you have cancer, not once, but twice. Imagine being given a 1% chance to live. Imagine losing a lung and being told to take it easy, stay safe, and play small. Most people would understand if you stopped there, but not today's guest. Instead, he decided to climb. Not just any climb, he became the first cancer survivor to summit Mount Everest. And even more incredibly, he did it with one lung. Just think about that for a minute. Most people struggle to walk up a flight of stairs without getting winded. And this man climbed to the highest point on Earth, and he didn't stop there. He climbed the highest peaks on every continent, including Mount Kilimanjaro, not once, but dozens of times, and helping others discover what they are truly capable of. So today is not just about climbing mountains. It's about something much deeper. It's about what do you do when life knocks you down? And how do you respond when the odds are against you? And how do you redefine what's possible for yourself and for others? Because here's the truth. The greatest limitation in your life are not your circumstances. It is your belief. And today we're going to challenge that. Because if a man with one lung can climb Mount Everest, what could you do if you stop telling yourself you can't? Let's get to it. Sean Swarner, thank you for being here today. I'm so excited to talk to you about your life and everything you've accomplished. So thank you for being here and welcome to the show.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm so excited because like you were mentioning, those accomplishments, that's just a story. But those accomplishments can become proof that we're all capable of more.
But yet we live in such a limited environment. You know, so many of us just grow up and we do what our parents did. And I guess when I think about your life, how remarkable it's been, because I've gotten to know the story and have always been inspired by you as a person. Tell me, take us back to what life was like when you got your first diagnosis, because I know that you were really young.
Absolutely. And like you were saying, you know, we all have those in what I call inherited limitations, those inherited goals, those inherited desires that are pushed on us from other people. And I think because of when I had it, I didn't have those imposed limitations on me. I didn't inherit those limitations from my parents or from others. So my whole story, and I'll just talk you through it quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, the first cancer, like you mentioned, I had two cancers. The first mm-hmm. one, I had no side effects. I had nothing. We had no idea that I had cancer until I was diagnosed with advanced stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. They told my parents, hey, your firstborn son has 3 months to live.
Oh, my goodness. Devastating.
Right? I had no swollen lymph nodes. I had no night sweats. I had nothing. I suffered a knee injury, and that knee injury triggered every joint in my body to go so haywire, my entire body swelled up like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Oh, my gosh.
So now here, here I am laying at home in bed, and mom and dad come to wake me up. I'm in the eighth grade. They wake me up for school, and they're like, who is this guy sitting in our son's bed? They couldn't even recognize their firstborn son.
Mm. How old were you? You were like 16 or 13?
The first one was 13. And I went mm-hmm. through... Yeah, I gained 60, 70 pounds. Mm. I lost all the hair in my body. In fact, one of the things that I will never forget is waking up in the morning and walking into the bathroom and looking at myself in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 60, 70 pounds overweight. My hair was falling out in chunks. And I couldn't even recognize who was looking back at me.
Wow.
I had no hope left. I was miserable. I had nothing of who I used to be. Mm. And I remember walking into the shower, turning on the hot water, and however long it takes for a hot water tank to run out, what, 20, 30 minutes?
Mm.
All of my hair fell out. I was on my hands and knees. Water was rising up because my hair was clogging the drain.
Wow.
And I was just sobbing. And I remember looking into the future about 3 months. And I have this image of my mom setting the dining room table. And my family was my mom, my dad, my younger brother, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And mom was setting the table, getting ready for dinner, except there was one empty seat.
Oh, my.
And I didn't want to be the empty seat of my family's dining room table.
Oh, wow.
So I no longer had this desire to fight for my own life. This mm-hmm. journey wasn't my own journey. This mm-hmm. journey was my family's journey.
Oh, man. That's powerful. So,
I had a deeper purpose to continue forward.
Wow. So when you were first diagnosed, I mean, what goes through your mind? You were told you had a 1% chance to live. What goes through your mind at that moment? Is it just like, I'm over? Or like, oh, no way?
It's interesting because my mom's mom, so my grandma, mm-hmm. passed away from cancer about 3 months beforehand.
Mm.
So my parents, when I was initially diagnosed, they didn't say, Sean, hey, you have cancer, because they didn't want me to associate cancer with death.
Mm.
They said, Sean, you're sick.
Okay.
And in my mind, I think that was one of the best things they could have done for me, because in my mind, I was never fighting for my life.
Oh, yeah.
I was just sick. So I saw it from a different perspective than most people. It was known as the C word. Oh, Sean is sick. Eventually, I found out that he had cancer,
wow.
but initially, that seed was planted, hey,
right.
you're going to be okay, because whatever my parents told me, I implicitly trusted them,
oh,
so
man.
It must be true.
Wow. Words are so important, and so what she did was she didn't cast a spell over you that, oh, you're going to die. She basically said, no, we're going to work towards, you're sick, you're going to be fine. So did you have a time in your life where you were like, okay, I'm not just going to survive. I'm really going to do it. Was it the moment that you had that vision, that you were given that vision, that you didn't want to be leave your family alone?
I think so. I think when I was initially diagnosed and a few months into it, when I was ballooned up, you know, obese, and that's when I pictured my parents, family at the dining room table, but also, in that same moment, that's when I had a complete shift of perspective.
Okay.
I wasn't focused on not dying. I was focused on living.
Yeah, that's great.
That helped so much. And you know, looking at anyone else who's focusing on the avoidance of whatever they don't want,
yeah.
as opposed to going after what they do want.
Yeah.
Well, wherever your energy and attention is drawn, that's what you're going to get.
That's so true. I mean, that's in everything, isn't it? In your job, it's in taking care of people at your home. It's always in where you focus, because we can draw, if you're constantly living in stress, you're going to attract more stress. And so I love that. Now, did you lose a lung in that particular cancer bout?
From that cancer, no. So I went through about 10 months, 11 months of chemotherapy. I lost all the hair in my body, lost all my friends, lost mm-hmm. everything. And then I was in remission for about a year and a half. And then going in for a checkup for the first cancer, they found a second one, a completely different primary cancer unrelated to the first one. So the first one was Hodgkin's lymphoma. The second one
wow.
was called Askin's sarcoma.
Oh my gosh.
And no one's ever had Hodgkin's and Askin's sarcoma before. And because of that, and because Askin's is so incredibly rare, I'm a nerd. I did a bunch of number crunching.
Mm-hmm.
My chances of survival was 0.00000001% chance of living.
Okay, I hope that wasn't then you did the stats. That was after, I hope.
Yeah, much later.
Okay. I was like, oh my gosh, because that would depress anybody. All right, so you went in for a treatment or to just get a checkup, and they found something else, and then did you have to go through surgery?
I did. I went through 3 months of intense chemotherapy. The first surgery I went through was something called a thoracotomy, where they cracked open my ribs on the right side, removed the tumor. So I had three broken ribs over there.
Oh my.
They put a drainage tube in, and I essentially had to learn to breathe again.
Wow.
You know, my first goal was to literally just make it from the hospital bed to the bathroom.
Oh.
That was goal number one. I had to learn how to breathe again. I had to learn how to walk again. I had to learn how to pretty much do everything again.
Mm.
A man with a cloth came in, read me my last rites, rosary in one hand, Bible in the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at my mom and my dad. I was like, I'm not dead yet. Like, what is he doing in here? Get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's so scary. And at that point, I'm sure your family was ready for anything. Going through cancer twice was a challenge, and they probably were exhausted. And we've been talking to Sean Swarner, and Sean is a world-class mountain climber, and you're going to hear all about that when we come back from the break. So take a minute, listen to our sponsors, and get some a notepad and some pens, because I'm telling you, Sean is full of amazing information. And so we're going to rejoin with Sean Swarner in a minute. This is Mary of the Mary Gardner Show, and we'll be right back.
Let's unlock the communicator and the leader that you always wanted to be. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Now let's get back into the studio. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. This is Mary. I just love having inspiring people on my show, because people that have already done amazing things can give us inspiration for our life. And that's why stories are so important. And I want to just share with you that Sean Swarner has an amazing story. He's a phenomenal speaker. And we've been talking to him about his early days. He survived cancer twice. But Sean, you were in the middle of talking about before, on your second surgery, you had an even more severe case and you were given the last rites. And then what happened?
Well, 3 months of intense chemotherapy, 1 month of intense radiation therapy, and then 10 more months of chemotherapy. And believe it or not, every time I was in the hospital, because the treatments were so harsh, the doctors didn't want me to remember how difficult it was. They knocked me into a medically induced coma. I don't remember being 16 years old.
Mm. Wow.
But it's in situations like that where I've done this even now, even when I was younger. I have never prayed for things to get easier.
Mm.
I've never hoped that things go away.
Mm-hmm.
I've always prayed to become stronger.
Because
sometimes you can't change the situation. I couldn't change the fact that I had cancer. You might not be able to change your situation, but you can always choose to change your perspective.
Oh, my. That is so good. That's so great for any parent who's dealing with frustrated kids or too many children. It's really good for anyone who's caring for anyone at home, or if you're going through work struggles. It is. It's about getting better. It's about getting stronger. And that's such a great perspective. And I know ultimately you did lose a lung in that particular surgery, did you not?
I did. So the radiation, that 1 month of intense radiation, I was, let's just say, my right lung was bombarded by all this intense gamma radiation. So I have both of them, but only one of them functions. It's kind of like Finding Nemo with that little lucky fin that he has. I call that my little lucky lung I have hanging out in there.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. That's great. I'm glad that you still have that one. Well, now, you did transition after you got to a place of success. I don't know how long it was before you started setting goals and becoming this powerhouse that you are. Take me through that journey of how you recovered and then became somebody who was unstoppable.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it didn't happen overnight, because I went to college. I turned into Belushi from Animal House. I was having a great time. And it was very, very difficult. I started off molecular biology. I thought I was super smart, but it didn't take me long to figure out that I wasn't going to pass classes like organic chemistry and immunology if I was partying the whole time. So that didn't work. I switched to psychology. And then I decided to work on my master's and my doctorate, but on a road trip from Ohio, where I was born and raised, had my treatment, to Florida, where I went and had my was accepted into grad school. Mm. I had to pull over, and it wasn't because I was tired of driving. It was because I was freaking out. Mm. It was the first time, looking back at it, it was the first time I ever had a panic attack.
Oh.
And I got a hotel room, and I spent the entire night staring at myself in the mirror again, very similarly to when I was going through the first cancer.
Mm.
This time, I just kept asking myself, what the are you doing? Mm-hmm. What the mm-hmm. are you doing?
Mm.
I was terrified.
Wow.
And I finally fell asleep, and I realized that wasn't a way to deal with it. So what was happening was I realized that I was terrified of the future, because if you look back, that year that I was going through my second cancer, my future was the next day.
Mm.
A year of my life went by when I was terrified to close my eyes at night because I didn't know if I was going to wake up the next morning or not.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden I'm supposed to go live my entire life? Well, where do you even begin?
Mm. Yeah.
So it's when I decided that I wanted to take my life back, and cancer, the C word that everyone's afraid of hearing,
mm-hmm.
it held so much power over me.
Ooh.
Until I realized, why am I allowing a 6-letter word to control my emotions? who's in charge here?
Yeah.
So later on, I end up standing in front of the mirror again, years later, and I just said the word cancer out loud 50, 60, 70 times, and the more it came out of my mouth, mm-hmm. past my lips, the less control it had over me,
mm.
and the less anxiety I had over it.
Mm. Wow, that's phenomenal. Okay, so you made it not a thing. It wasn't going to control you. It wasn't going to lead your life. And then you decided that these things, losing a lung, the cancer, these things were not going to be limitations for you. And then you decided, instead of having limitations, you wanted to set goals. I know that you ended up setting some really large goals. Take me from there and where you ended up going.
It's so crazy when you say it and I hear it out loud, because people often ask, well, walk me through that.
They're
like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was never a logical progressive
mm-hmm.
step-by-step process to get to the top of Everest. I mean, I was in Jacksonville, Florida when I decided to come up with this crazy idea of being the first cancer survivor to climb Everest. The highest point in Florida is the top of the Four Seasons Hotel in Miami.
Yeah, there's not a lot here. That's where I am. It's not. It's right. But where did the idea of climbing Mount Everest, where did it come from?
It came from looking back. I took a sabbatical from my studies because I couldn't continue down. I wanted to be a psychologist for cancer patients.
Mm.
But I couldn't help others until I helped myself first. And I had to take that difficult proverbial look in the mirror again because that's where all the answers are. I was looking outside, asking other people to help me out, help asking other people to give me direction, to give me goals. And that goes back to those inherited goals that I mentioned earlier, goals that you kind of adopt and adapt into your life because of others. So I decided I wanted to do something big because, as we all know, cancer is not an individual disease. It's not an individual journey.
Mm.
And I wanted to use the highest platform in the world to scream something simple, but something no one on earth can live without, which is hope.
Oh, that is great. Did people try to talk you out of it? I mean, that's kind of crazy.
Where do I even begin with that list?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it would be an impossible feat, especially when you're landing in Florida, training and the whole bit, and only with one lung, one workable lung. What did people tell you to do? How did they advise you?
They told me it was physiologically impossible.
Mm.
And again, that's when I realized I don't want someone else's limitations to become my reality.
Mm.
You know, whenever you suggest something, hey, I want to try this, and they look at you and say, well, I don't know, you're not an athlete, or I don't know, you don't have the pedigree, or I don't know, you don't have the education.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's their limitations coming out and reflecting on you.
Yeah.
The one thing I learned a long time ago is what I say is about me, what you hear is about you.
Ooh, say that again. That's really good.
What I say is about me.
Okay.
What you hear is about you.
Oh, my goodness. That's so great. That would help a lot of people get along, I would think. So we do have different perspectives. Yeah, because you have a different perspective of the same situation. And that happens all the time. It causes a lot of communication issues because people that are evaluating are hearing it from their perspective. And so you basically learned how to mentally overcome fear, and then you set some pretty impossible goals. How does that happen when nobody else around you is doing this thing and you have a dream and you decide to do it? What's your first step?
First step is actually understanding and realizing why I want to go after that goal. Mm-hmm. Because looking back at all the adventures that I've done, Everest, the Seven Summits, you mentioned the South Pole, the North Pole, I've also run 7 marathons in 7 days on all 7 continents.
Oh my gosh.
And one of the things that hit me when I reached the North Pole, which is called the Explorer Grand Slam, the 7 summits and the two poles. To me, it sounds like a Denny's breakfast platter.
Yeah, it does.
So I reached the North Pole. Amazon's there. They're doing a film. There's a film on Amazon called True North, the Sean Swanner story. Beautiful footage. Camera pans over. Sean, you just completed something in history no one's ever done before. How do you feel? And of course, for the camera, for media, I was like, oh my God, this feels amazing. I feel awesome. Mm-hmm. But inside, I felt hollow.
Oh.
I went home. I was depressed for about a month. And I couldn't figure out why until I realized that sometimes achievement and fulfillment arrive on a different timeline. So what I did was, looking back at everything I've accomplished, I realized that I didn't want to have any more false promises in life.
Oh, wow.
I didn't want to arrive at a place and look around and think to myself, well, is this it? Or worse yet, now what? And the first time that ever happened was going through the first cancer. The doctor said, Sean, you're in remission. Go live your life. My family, my friends, everyone, super happy. My first question was, now what?
Yes. Yeah, you sound like one of those type A people that always have to have that next summit. You got to climb that next thing, that next goal.
Exactly.
And that's keeping you moving forward, which is how you've been so strong and you've been able to not talk to, look at that fear. You had another goal. I love that. I think that's so positive. How does somebody do that? Because I think if people learn that, they would stop being so depressed. We know so many people live in anxiety and depression. Is it just setting a wild goal, or how do they do that? How do they find that goal that's going to really light them up?
Well, first of all, you have to look at what mountain you're climbing, what journey you're on. Are you chasing a target? Are you chasing a journey that others want you to do?
Yeah.
Or is it one that you value?
Yeah.
So you have to have that awareness of what journey are you on? And is the end result yours? Do you want to get there? Or are you being encouraged by others to arrive there?
Yeah.
That's the first step.
That first step is so important. That's the thing that can get you out of bed and get you alive and feeling something again. And knowing that you did it with this impossible goal of climbing Mount Everest with one lung. So many people just, they don't have that goal. They don't know where they're going. They're just like out at sea and they're going with the waves. And we've been talking to Sean Swanner about being the first person with cancer to, that had had cancer, that climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and Everest. And he's somebody who is such an inspiration to us. And Sean is a phenomenal speaker. And Sean, what is your website? Let's share that with the audience.
That's SeanSwanner.com.
Sean, S-E-A-N. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Sean Swanner on the Mary Gardner Show. I'm so appreciative and grateful that you're here. We're going to take a quick break and talk to our sponsors, and we'll be right back to hear how you can do it too.
You're not starting over, you're rising higher. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the studio. This is Mary Gardner, and we are talking to my friend, Sean Swanner, who is one of the most successful mountain climbers of all time. And so we are going to dig in because, Sean, what you've been talking about is so powerful. Most people stop at obstacles, and you have leaned into it. So at this point, you've climbed Everest and Mount Kilimanjaro, and you've run the 7 marathons in 7 days on the 7 continents. I mean, you've done so many things, but I want to talk about the climb itself because so many people want to do it. It's on the bucket list. But what is the hardest moment on Everest that you've experienced, or that some of your clients, because you take people up on trips, what are those hardest moments look like?
I take people up Kilimanjaro. I've only done Everest once, so I need to make that clear, because that is a 4-week endeavor.
Oh,
going
okay.
up Everest.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. Kilimanjaro we do in 7 days, up and down the mountain 7 days, and then we fly into the Serengeti for a 4-day safari. I mean, that's
ooh,
enjoyable.
Wow. Okay.
But sleeping in a tent on the side of a mountain for 4 weeks. I don't know if you've ever not showered for 4 weeks, but it's not pleasant.
Oh man. Okay. That would be enough to kill most people's dream of doing that. 4 weeks without a shower. No thanks. Oh my gosh.
It's different. But again, you know, if you have a grandiose, huge goal in mind, you're gonna have to put in the time, the effort, you're gonna have to build the resilience, but understanding and knowing that because you're aware of what you're going after, it means so much to you.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever gets in your way, whatever obstacles slow you down, snowstorms, a boss thing, you can't do it, whatever it might be, you know the end result's worth it. So you're just going to kind of push through the difficult time, because it's never going to be enough to slow you down, enough to stop you.
Well, I know that Everest then is, because we've seen so many people that have lost their life on Everest. And there's been movies made about that and everything. Beck Weathers was somebody who's also a speaker out there that survived Everest. But you take people up to Kilimanjaro, and you've done it over 26 times, 27 times, something ridiculous.
this will be my, yep, this will be my 28th trip. And the average success rate on the mountain is about 48%, whereas my groups are at 99% success rate.
Oh, okay.
So we do things very differently.
I want to hear about it. I want to dive in, because this is something legitimately you do right now, take people on trips. And I want to hear about, like, how do you train? How do you, the mental game, what are the difficult parts of Kilimanjaro? Is it something that's, why are only 48% of the people making it, first of all?
Honestly, I think it's one of two reasons. They overestimate the mountain, or they underestimate the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they don't train enough, or they just don't have enough respect for the mountain. And it never fails. When I hear someone getting on our groups and they say, oh, I'm going to conquer that mountain. Well, mm-hmm. if it's you versus Mother Nature, I'm not a betting man, but I will put $1 million on Mother Nature every time. You're never going to win that battle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so many other people, when they get there, they think they're on this expedition.
Mm-hmm.
They have to conquer the mountain. They have to get to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the top becomes a bonus of having fun. You know,
oh.
I've actually coined the term, not expedition, but inspedition. So it's an inward journey through an outward adventure.
Oh.
And if you start to appreciate the process and appreciate going from this camp to the next camp and having conversations with your teammates, bonding, forming these cohesive teams. And I also, I'm never out front unless it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, great metaphor for anyone who's in a leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
You only need to get out front when it's dangerous. You know, put your hand here, put your foot there, put your foothold here, grab this. 99% of the time, I'm leading from behind.
Okay.
I'm trying to empower people to go and explore.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does that work? Kilimanjaro, is it dangerous? And do you still go if you're going to have some kind of unusual weather conditions? Or do you stop the whole thing and everyone goes home?
So there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad gear.
Okay.
So if people show up and it's rainy, guess what?
You're still going to.
Gore-Tex is a great fabric. We're still going to move forward. And we will find ways to deal with it. And just like anything else, if you're not prepared, then it's just not going to work. But we're always prepared. And I've used the same team day in, day out, year in, year out, the same locals. They adopted me into one of their tribes. So whoever comes over with me now is literally considered part of the family.
Oh, well, how do people train for it? Because, like, I'm in Florida. I've seen people at the Y, and they put on a backpack and they go down the Stairmaster. Is that how you train? But also, how do you train your mind when your body is under extreme stress, too? Those are two separate things, your body and your mind.
Absolutely. But it's amazing how much they work together, because the mind quits well before the body is ready to give up.
Mm.
And that's why we train the mind most. So you visualize yourself on top. You picture what it means to you. It's not just a checkbox. It's not just a goal you want to accomplish. Why? What is your deeper meaning? What is your deeper purpose? And then we also do things on the mount. I give them a question every morning that they think about throughout the day. And then at evening, at dinner, we unravel that. And one of them is, and I love this one, what part of you that is no longer serving you right now do you plan on leaving at the summit?
Mm. Oh, that's powerful. And what do they say? What are some of the things? I'd love to hear about some of the changes people make.
You know, it's interesting. It's all over the place. It's from uncertainty to my ego to greed to fear. I mean, you name it. It's so individualistic. I've had people who are 13. I've had people who are 70 years old on the mount. So it's literally all over the place.
Mm.
But because of that, it's more personal to each person on the mount, each teammate on the mount.
Mm.
And I think that's where that cohesive bond of the team comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And the desire to reach the summit, like I said, isn't about the summit. It's about something much deeper than
something
that.
Personal. What is the biggest lie that you've said or seen that people believe about themselves?
I thought you were going to say the biggest lie on the mountain. The biggest lie on the mountain is whenever anyone asks me, we could be 5 minutes from camp, we could be 6 hours from camp. Whenever they ask me, how much longer? My answer is always 5 more minutes. That's the biggest lie on the mountain.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. So you're the biggest liar that's out there.
It's either that or I tell them, well, you're already there.
Oh my gosh. So it's okay. So, and then do people get completely exhausted, fatigued, and you have to stop the entire expedition because someone is just too tired?
Never had to stop the entire expedition. We have had a couple rescues off the mountain, and you can be from the side of the mountain back at the hotel in less than 6 to 8 hours. So that's not an issue. One of the fun things, well, not really fun, but one of the things that we have always done, and I've always done with every day, the mountaineering, the expeditions, the speaking, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'll wake up in the morning, and we do this on the mountain too. Like, okay, well, what if this happens? Okay, we're going to deal with that.
Okay.
This way.
Mm-hmm.
What if that happens? Well, we're going to deal with it this way. It's not that we focus on it, but if something bad happens, we immediately know how to react. We don't have to think, oh my God, what do I do in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
We've already rehearsed it in our mind.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to react instantly.
Okay. And then does it get really cold? I mean, that would be the thing for me that would just, I don't like being cold.
I think the only people who like being, the only things that like being cold are penguins. We actually, if you can imagine hiking from the equator to the North Pole in 6 days, that's what Kilimanjaro is like.
I don't know. Give me a description.
Going through those different climactic zones. So you start at the base where it's like it's hot, it's warm because you're 200 miles south of the equator.
Oh.
You're going through an African rainforest.
Oh.
And then you go up a little bit further. Then you're in the, say, the Sahara Desert because it's, the trees stop growing. And then you continue forward, and then it's like shale. It's kind of really rugged. And then all of a sudden, you're standing on glaciers.
Oh.
So it's like hiking from the equator to the North Pole in 6 days, going through those different climatic zones.
Oh, that's powerful. I mean, that's really, really bizarre that you're doing that. It's kind of like living in North Carolina. They have all the seasons at once. That's really
absolutely.
A lot. Okay, so you're dressing for the hot weather and then the severe cold. You can get it all.
It can go from 85 to minus 20.
Oh, that's chilly. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, let me ask a general question because this could stop somebody. But what if someone feels stuck? And what is the first step towards, like, this sounds impossible. What's the first step they can do to doing their impossible? Maybe it's climbing another summit in their life. What's the first step if they feel stuck?
If they feel stuck, ask yourself a question. You know, am I accepting this as a fact that might not actually be true?
Mm-hmm.
Who's convincing myself that it's not possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, it goes back to something inherited. You know, it could be an inherited limitation. Before we turn 18, we're told no almost 200,000 times.
Yeah.
And imagine that. And now imagine flipping it around and being told, hey, give it a shot.
Mm.
Yes, you can do that. More empowering thoughts. And that goes back to one of your first messages. what I call your internal dialogue.
Yeah.
Pay attention to how you speak to yourself, because you talk to yourself more than anyone else throughout the day.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are so good things to think about. And so often we stop ourselves. We just go to the edge of where we've been before. And so I just want you guys, when we go to the break, just take a quick minute. What are you missing out on? And what else is happening around you that you can look at that could start to inspire you to set some new goals and to move forward in life? Because so many people are stuck, and they're stuck in that anxiety or just the sameness. They're content and they're not pushing themselves forward, but maybe there's something else out there for you. And today we're talking to Sean Swerner, who's a motivational speaker around the country and around the world. And we're talking about climbing your summit. So while we're on break, I want you to think about, what is your summit and where do you need to go? And why are you hearing this message at this time right now? I'm Mary Gardner of The Mary Gardner Show. We'll be right back to follow up. And here's a word from our amazing sponsors. We'll be right back.
Sharpen your voice. Refine your brand. With The Mary Gardner Show. Let's get back into the studio. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Mary Gardner Show. And we're talking about your summit. We're talking about your purpose in life. Today, we've got a guest, Sean Swerner, who is a mountain climber who has done so many miraculous things. But my question to you is, what miraculous thing are you supposed to be doing in your life? Do you have something calling you? Is there something gnawing at your heart, something you know that you're supposed to be doing, and a dream that was put there? I truly believe that that is why you're here on earth, is to pursue those summits in your life and to actually get out there and figure out how to do it. You're going to get stopped. You're going to get challenged, but you find people in your life that can help you, motivate you, mentor you. You can read about it, and you've got to go for it. That's where the juice and excitement in life. Sean, we've been talking about purpose in life and talking about pushing past limits. Tell me, how do people do that? Push past the limits that their mind, you said that our mind stops before our body. How do you push your mind beyond so your body can keep going?
Purpose. One word, purpose. And it kind of goes back to what you were just mentioning, how everyone's here for a reason. Everyone has goals, these desires. You know, if you were no longer around, I just mean the proverbial you, if you were no longer around, those who love you the most and those who you love the most would never be able to experience your creation, whatever that might be, if you were no longer around and you didn't put forth the effort. So don't just be selfish and do it for yourself. Do it for those who matter the most, because if you don't do it, no one will.
Man. That's so amazing. And the older you get, the more people that you see that randomly, you know, get sick and they die and move on. And so life can be really short. And so I love that you look ahead a little bit. And like you did when you were having that vision when you were a little boy and you saw your family having dinner without you, and that just didn't work for you. So I think that really could help you handle some of the setbacks and challenges. But how do you handle today your setbacks and challenges after everything you've been through? Do you have a system that you use, or is it just conditioning that you've trained yourself to handle challenges?
It's conditioning, but obviously that condition didn't happen overnight. So whenever anything, I don't want to say had happened to me, for example, I always have I attempt to always have a really positive attitude. So when people ask, hey, how's your day going? And it's not a really good day. Mm-hmm. I never say I'm having a bad day.
Yeah.
I reframe it and say I'm having a less than ideal day.
and
I think that helps.
Yeah.
But I also have a sense of humor, because I think to myself, oh my God, look what's going on right now. And mm-hmm. I stop, mm-hmm. take a breath, yeah. couple deep breaths. And I think to myself, well, I've been through worse. I can handle this.
Sure.
Because every single person in the world yeah. has survived 100% of life's most difficult moments.
Yeah.
So and that's far. A pretty good record.
That's so far. I always tell people where I'm like, look around. You live in the United States, or you live in Florida. You own a car. You have a clean place to sleep. You got food on the table. Your life is great. And they're like, oh, God, I just never thought of it that way. Because we look at these big dream or these big problems as like big boulders in our life. And really, if you look and start looking at all the great things that we have and we've been given at this time in life. So it's a different perspective, as we were saying before. So, Sean, I know that people are thinking, how do I get involved with Sean? And if they want to have this experience with you, are you leading any upcoming climbs? And how can people get involved or follow your journey?
Absolutely. We have 3 spots left open for the Kilimanjaro trip this year, which I take every year. And it's a 7-day hike, 4-day safari. We fly into the Serengeti, and they can just go to seanswanner.com. Sean the proper way and the Warner Brothers with an S on the front.
And when is the Kilimanjaro trip?
That's July 5th to the 18th this year.
Okay. I would say it would be great. And then how many days does it take to get over to Kilimanjaro to get adjusted before you go on the 7-day trip?
It for some people, it takes a while to get adjusted. But from here, let's say you leave from JFK, you head over one stop, Doha, Kilimanjaro. You could be there in 20 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole trip is maybe 14 days in and out of the country.
Okay. So you've got some days beforehand where you're getting adjusted. Is the atmosphere totally different? Are they higher? I'm sure they probably are because it's a mountain territory. So how long does it take to adjust to their air quality and things?
Actually, the hotel's at about 3,000 feet. The mountain is at 19,000 feet. It's the highest freestanding mountain in the world, but it does not require any technical abilities. It's a hike. Anyone can do it.
Oh. Well, how long do people need to prepare to be able to do the hike?
That's a good question. So people ask me, well, what type of shape do I have to be in? Well, it depends on what type of shape you are now. Round the shape. So if you're in a round shape, maybe you need a little bit more training than someone who's not in a round shape.
Yeah.
So there's no set bar for like running a marathon like I did before.
Okay.
You can't say you're going to climb it by achieving this threshold, but you know. So maybe 3 to 6 months training.
Yeah. Oh, 3 to 6 months training. That's a good amount. If you are puffing when you're going up the stairs or you're on the Stairmaster for 5 minutes and you're puffing hard, let's say that's a good example of someone not being in shape. But if you go and you're doing some regular, because right before you do a marathon, you're doing some long runs. The last before your marathon, you do like a 20-mile run, I think, a couple of days, and then you do some tapering. So is it like that? You probably should. You could go on ChatGPT and find people that have prepared for Kilimanjaro and start preparing. I know, like I said, here in Florida, we don't have mountains, but we have the Stairmaster. And if you put a 50, how much are they carrying on their back?
You're only carrying 20-25 pounds. We have 2 porters per person. When you get to camp, everything's set up. We have tents that are big enough. I'm 6'2". I can stand up in them. We have cots. We have a dining tent. Everything is cushy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there coffee?
I have someone who wakes you up in the morning. You don't even have to set an alarm clock. He'll knock on your tent with coffee, tea, or hot chocolate.
Good. So the food, you don't have to bring your own food. The food is provided?
Food is provided. It's cooked by an amazing chef. Mm. And if you eat like a king or a queen of the mountain, like royalty.
Okay. So this really is an excursion that could be life-changing, because what I'm hearing from you is that each person has their own summit. Each person is looking at leaving something behind. I know that, Sean, you were so generous. I was able to give you some names for your cancer flag. Do you take that flag up every single time?
We do. We always collect names of people who've been touched by cancer. And it started off almost as a fundraiser for my cancer charity. But what we do now is we actually pay for a survivor's trip every year. And then it's the responsibility of that survivor to raise funds for next year's survivor.
Wow.
Paying it forward. Anyone can go, but it's the life-changing trip for anyone who actually is brave enough to go out there and make a difference in their own lives.
So amazing. It's such a great, great thing for somebody to try to do or to put down as a goal. So you'll want to visit the seanswanner.com. And we're going to take a little pivot right now because, Sean, there's this segment that we have. It's called You Rock.
You rock. You rock. You rock. You rock. You rock.
And the U-Rock section is because I had a brother who passed away about 7 or 8 years ago. And Terry had scoliosis and he lived in a lot of pain. But one thing he was always really great at was encouragement. And so one of the goals for my show is that we encourage people and we acknowledge people. We tell them how great they are. We tell them when we're in gratitude. And it's encouragement is such an important thing in today's world because everybody's busy and we don't get that appreciation that often. So I always appreciate one person. And today I'm going to appreciate two people. I want to thank two sets of people. I want to thank Mike and Debbie Gardner, who are my brother and sister-in-law, because they were so perceptive to send dinner to my mom the other night on her birthday. We had a 95th birthday party and they sent dinner. And then I want to thank Michelle and also Christine Ostroot, Michelle Stanky and Christine Ostroot, who came and sang to my mom all night some prayer meeting songs and spiritual songs and hymns. And it was the best night ever. So I want to say to all of you, you rock. So thank you all. It was an amazing night. Sean, who do you want to say you rock to?
Well, you have two. I'm going to throw out one and then another one as well. First one is my 103-year-old grandma.
Aww.
Her wisdom and insight to life have just been amazing and have impacted on me to see life a little bit differently, to not take it for granted, and to really solidify how I see life. The second one is my wife, Julissa, who was born and raised in Puerto Rico, and when she moved initially from San Juan to Colorado, the climate's not exactly the same. Her first language is Spanish, mine's not. But she and I support each other so much.
Aww.
And it's interesting because we have learned to actually communicate and listen. So she rocks because she's so patient with me. And
aww,
people ask me, well, doesn't she get worried about what she's doing? Like, well, she knew what she was getting into when we first met.
I love that. I love that. Oh, this is so great. Sean, thank you for that. That's so great. And is there something really powerful about today's conversation? Because it removes every excuse. Because we all have reasons. We all have challenges. We all have moments where quitting would make sense. But what Sean has reminded us of is that your life is not defined by what happens to you. It is defined by what you decide. And sometimes that very thing looks like your greatest limitation. It's actually not. It's your greatest calling. So today I want to challenge you. Where have you been playing small? And where have you already decided that something is not possible? And what would happen if you just took one step forward anyway? Because you don't have to climb Everest or Mount Kilimanjaro, but you do have to climb your summit. Sean, take us out with the one last word you have to inspire our listeners today.
Super simple. Resilience is not built through grit, not strength, not anything that we've always been taught. It's actually built through loyalty. Loyalty to what matters most to you and your personal core values, like family, personal growth, man, faith. So when you're loyal to your personal core values, that resilience comes naturally.
Beautiful. Thank you, Sean. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. And for all of you who are going to see us next time, we welcome you to come to marygardner.com to see all of our shows. And we appreciate all of you. And don't forget, please follow your summit and stay inspired. God bless you.